Welcome to the Art Talk podcast, where I discuss the stories that help us accomplish to be better artists as well as better art entrepreneurs. I am Karin Merks, your host, and I'm artist, art entrepreneur, and art coach or teacher. This is episode 62 of Art Talk, and today I have Natalie Richby at my guest. Do I pronounce that right? Rigby or Richby? Rigby?
It's Rigby.
Rigby. Natalie is art historian, curator, and broadcaster. She is an inclusion-focused curator with specialisms in modern and contemporary British art. Natalie's practice is centered around making art exhibitions and collections accessible to everyone and demystifying academia to open up the industry to all audience. And that to me was very interesting as an academic myself. She has a substantial experience working within the museum, culture and arts industry. Knowledge areas include inclusive exhibition development and delivery, fine art curation, collections development, museum and curatorial career coaching. And on top of that, she's open if you have a great project. Right?
Yeah.
So welcome, Natalie. I'm so happy to have you as my guest.
It's a pleasure. I don't get asked to do these things very often. It's usually me doing the interviewing.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice, actually.
Great. So you like to demystify academia and make art approachable. Can you explain to us what that exactly means and how you came to that?
So it started actually a long time ago. I had my first job in museums in 2002, and I had a great mentor. But their ethos at the time, and his name was Brian, and his ethos at the time was family friendly, and it was really important to him. And when I started working in museums, he noticed I had what he used to call an edge.
Okay.
And so he kind of put me to work, as it were, with teenagers. And I found that I had a real rapport with teenagers. And it stayed with me all the way through. And we always talk about teenagers, don't we? Because they're kind of the lost audience in museums, aren't they?
In art in general, yeah.
Yeah, so I found that that was it was kind of my thing, which was quite helpful. But through kind of talking to, I talk to a lot of people. I'm very good at asking questions. I found that it's not, there's no physical barrier to going into a museum and experiencing art. It's all mental and emotional. There are barriers.
Yeah.
So I then became really interested in how to break those barriers down. So that's when we started looking at how we interpret our art and how we make our shows. And so the way I did it was to do it with a bit of tongue in cheek and not to take ourselves too seriously. We kind of put a spin on an exhibition title, and then we would kind of create a bit of spin in the exhibition. And so the exhibitions I used to curate, or still curate actually, I haven't stopped doing it. they're just friendly.
Yeah.
And they have the academia, but it's in a very friendly way. So then people don't feel like they can't interact with the work.
Yeah. And also, that's so true. I had this experience in the Netherlands. I'm a Dutchie in London. In the Pond Museum for Modern Art, in front of a work of Bill Viola. And he had, it's a mount on the wall, videos in slow motion, as you know, were his work. And it depicts the four seasons. It depicts life, death, teenagers giggling, making a fool out of what they saw with just a paper. I had to fill it, and I started to communicate with them. And everything changed. And they thanked me because suddenly they were taking seriously. Is that something that you feel, that they are taking seriously and not put down? So from this is the almighty art and you have to look at it that way, but that you can approach them?
Well, that's what I started doing. So every time if I saw somebody who was kind of, you can always tell when someone's not enjoying something, can't you? So yeah. I would just go up and go, what do you think about that then? And then we would have a conversation, and that's where it all starts, really. Because I mean, you can place a picture on the wall, you can put an art installation in a space, but unless you can connect with it, there's no, I wouldn't say it's a waste of time, but it's about finding that intellectual level. And I don't want art, I don't want art to be elitist.
Yeah.
And yep. It always has been. And it's going back that way. I controversially will say it. It's becoming something for the kind of upper classes and those who have studies, whereas it should be for everybody. It should be for everybody, shouldn't it?
I absolutely agree with that. It should be for everybody. And I had a conversation, my last interview, with an artist. And, as you see, I do representational art. And she too, and she said, because it's most inclusive. If you put a block, just like a block in a square or in a room, and they have to read a whole page of a made up philosophy about it, people feel excluded. They have like, I don't have that intellect. I don't know what they're talking about. And so you push people away instead of, and art is one of the most important things we can have in the world. It's made redundant in schools, but it is the most important thing, because the energy that comes off it, the narrative it tells, the relation that people can have with it and feel good, just freaking feel good and have a happy feeling when they are surrounded with, that needs to be for everyone. I totally agree with you. Totally.
The great thing about COVID is when we were all kind of shut in our houses and we didn't know what to do, that is the first thing that everybody turned to, wasn't it? It was art and music, and it was therapy. And in a way, we should be reflecting that in exhibitions and making them more accessible and not kind of putting it on a pedestal, really. It should be something that we can all kind of party with.
Yeah. And what role do you think auction houses also play in this?
Oh, that's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, it's difficult because of it's the price tag, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I know now that I always had like, it's ridiculous for something that I would not even consider art. They ask the most ridiculous prices, but that are hedge funds and investment bankers. Those are not art lovers. And there you have, it's a difficult one, because how much does that exclude people? They'll see this and they think, ooh, that's never for me.
I suppose the most difficult thing for me, which I always found difficult actually, is the fact that there are people buying art and they're spending a lot of money on their art and they're building these amazing collections, but then they're going into a house and then they're not getting viewed. And that for me is, I mean, I can't stop anybody doing this, but it's problematic. For me in my career, I would go and try and seek out these pieces of work and get them out of those private collections and get them on display. And that became really, really important to me.
And that's difficult too.
It is.
Because not all private collectors do that, because in my research, I studied the collection, I studied the directorship of Edith Wilde. He was director of the museum in Amsterdam. I did also museum studies. And he was able to collect, to get in his farewell exhibition, La Grande Parade, the most exquisite art from private collectors. And they did this because of him on personal title. So it's so difficult to ask that. The insurance prices going through the roof. So how do you do that?
Well, luckily, when you, I mean, as I've discovered becoming freelance, it then becomes a little bit more difficult. When you work in a museum, you've got the amazing government indemnity scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Which you can apply for. But yeah, you're right about insurance. It becomes really difficult. I mean, I suppose really talking about private collectors, I should talk about Charles Saatchi.
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't have opened his collection in the 90s, I want to say 90s.
90s, I think. Sure, yeah.
When he showed the YBAs, I don't think it wouldn't be a thing now. If they would, no. All of that artwork would still be in private houses,
yeah.
And kept very much off view.
Yeah. So and those ridiculous stories about some Japanese guy who buys a sunflower by Van Gogh, and when he dies, he wants to be buried with it. And I have like, you know, yes. I create art, and when I get commissions, that is for the person, but it stays in the family. And maybe at one point it goes out of that family. It is not. Art needs to be there for a lot of people to enjoy and not closed off. Yeah.
No, you're right. The other thing, you're never going to shut me up.
That's good.
The other thing I find really frustrating is when you go to museums and you've got a little kind of barrier and you're kind of funneled to see artwork. So
I always call that the IKEA syndrome.
Yeah. So you're kind of funneled in a queue to see these artworks. And then people aren't actually looking.
No.
They're taking a photo with their phone and moving on, and they're not experiencing
people nowadays it. Experience art in a museum through their phone. I have like, why the heck do you do that?
Yeah.
If you do that through the phone, then why not do it online?
Well, I try because my children are 11 and 15, and so they've always, I mean, they're going to have an art. They have no choice, really. They have to be into art. They've got no choice. But I've tried to encourage them to look, you know, look with your eyes. It sounds so stupid, but you have to look at everything with your eyes. You can't do all this phone stuff. You have to actually experience it. And when we went to see Sunflowers at the National Gallery, I always remember they were really nervous about holding up the queue because there were all these people wanting to take their photos with their phones. And they were like, oh, no, we need to move on. And I'm like, no, take a moment. They can wait. There's another 4 hours till the museum shuts. There's plenty of time. Just take your time and experience it.
Yeah. And that in itself is not right, that people have to stand in a queue to take a photo and to move on. That is not art experience. And the camera, this is an artificial eye. Your own eyes are the same as the camera. And if you learn to see rather than thinking what you see, you need to do that without your phone. Otherwise, you can never really see.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, I kind of understand it for capturing memories. I kind of get it for that aspect. But just to go and take a photo and then move on and not actually look, I just don't get that.
No.
I took my children to see Guernica in Madrid.
And huge, right?
It's amazing. And it was such an experience. But they don't have no cameras on that floor. And that is brilliant because there's just a whole crowd of people just almost having this mutual connection with this painting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about hidden histories. I like that. And unheard voices. So that has to do with exhibitions you created. And is this because of the lack of this in general? when it comes to art exhibitions in galleries as well as in museums? What is the interest in these hidden histories? What is it that you want to bring forward?
It's funny, really. I've never really had, because I mean, there's a lot of things about woke at the moment, but throughout my career, there's never. I mean, I don't really see the world that way. So there, I mean,